Fusion, the international science radio show.
We have a bouncer and the doors of perception.
The good, the bad, the ugly.
It gets pretty exciting.
The myths, the truths.
Toxicology.
Astro-seismology.
Magnetism. The dark side.
Genetically engineered potatoes.
Planetoid.
Planetoid.
I love that word.
Hello and welcome to Diffusion. Sit back and relax while we inject weird and wonderful science directly into your dreams. I'm Ian Wolfe. On this edition, we listen to the Transhumanism and Emerging Technologies talks from Transhumanism Australia. This week, you'll hear Peter Zing's overview of emerging technologies and Meow Ludo Meow Meow talk about using current technology to create real cat girls. First up, here's Diffusion News and an update on the CRISPR babies. The weekend of the 15th of December will mark my 20th anniversary of producing Diffusion. I went to visit the 2SER studio on the 27th floor where the Discovery Science Show was produced live on the evening of the 15th of December 1998. I joined the team and started learning. The earliest recording I have is a cassette from March 1999. I've unearthed a pile of old cassettes and I'm in the process of digitising them. I'll be playing some selected content as part of the mix on the show, and occasionally complete shows from the archives. If any of the old Discovery Diffusion team are listening and would like to chat on air about the old days, please contact me and let me know. CRISPR controversy. He Zhongkui was in the news last week for genetically engineering twin babies, one with an engineered immunity to HIV/AIDS. He's given his presentation at the second International Summit on Human Genome Editing in Hong Kong and answered some very hard questions from the audience. Despite the fact that he hasn't published in a peer-reviewed journal yet, most biologists now believe that he's done what he said and use CRISPR to engineer the CCR5 gene in one of the baby girls. The new gene is a copy of a gene found in 1% of Europeans that protects them from HIV infection. The bearer of two copies of the mutated gene is not only immune to AIDS, but more likely to be infected by West Nile virus and die from a flu infection. Controversially, the same mutation is associated with increased intelligence. He committed a scientific no-no in reporting his research to the media before he'd published a peer-reviewed paper. That was unwise, but not unethical. There has been a lot of criticism, some from professional ethicists. I had hoped it would express concern for the children. Most of the criticism has been content-free expressions of feelings of disgust, which doesn't help anyone understand your objections. Some of the criticism was for his choice of making babies immune to HIV instead of curing an inherited disease like muscular dystrophy or cystic fibrosis. However, the CCR5 mutation is one of the most studied and understood, so it actually makes sense that it would be the easiest of mutations to introduce to get only the desired changes and no off-target mutations that could cause disease. It's low-hanging fruit. The most valid-sounding criticism was that we don't know the long-term effects of using CRISPR in humans, despite many uses of the gene-editing tool in other animals. However, the only way to find out is by doing it, and the most safe way to do it is to engineer a mutation that doesn't have a big effect, so you can observe whether the babies suffer any side effects from the CRISPR process itself. This was always going to be the case. An expert in informed consent criticised her's way of obtaining informed consent from the parents. However, although her wasn't formally trained in obtaining consent like the expert, he did follow international guidelines written by the experts. The biggest criticism turns out to be a lack of transparency, which means that he didn't go through established hierarchies of senior scientists and government officials. Basically, he acted like any physicist or chemist who doesn't talk about their work until it's time to publish a paper or present at a conference, instead of a medical researcher who consults widely and goes through approval committees. He's originally a biophysicist, so perhaps he was naive rather than deliberately trying to bypass ethical safeguards. Her is an outsider who didn't know that the tradition of the medical researcher tribe is to consult the elders before any experiments, and the tribe has punished him by talking about how outraged they are that he hasn't followed tradition. This is how the ethicists and other medical researchers sound to me. Less concerned for the welfare of the children and their descendants, but more concerned for the outrageous flouting of the traditions of the tribe by an outsider who is not trained in their customs. The Chinese government is now investigating whether they should punish her, despite the fact that there's no penalty for his actions in any Chinese legislation. The reason is that the outrage of the Western medical researcher tribe has lost face for the Chinese tribal elders, the government, and the senior scientists. If there were blonde, blue-eyed, super-intelligent Chinese CRISPR babies, I'd be much more worried. Her also revealed that there's a second woman pregnant, but the other implantations have been stopped by the Chinese government. We have not heard the last of this story. I've linked the video of her's presentation on the Diffusion episode page. You're listening to Ian Wolfe on Diffusion Science Radio. Send emails to science@diffusionradio.com. We're brought to you across Australia on the Community Radio Network and podcast over the internet on www.diffusionradio.com. Transhumanism Australia. I recorded the sound from all the talks at the recent Transhumanism and Emerging Technologies talks from Transhumanism Australia. Peter Zing founded Transhumanism Australia with Elise Su, and they organised these talks. Peter introduced the event by explaining what transhumanism is, and then talking about the emerging technologies that companies like KPMG like to invest in, using the Gartner hype cycle that we've explored previously on Diffusion. Here's Peter Zing.
Thank you for coming, everyone. This is KPMG. Thanks for coming along. My name's Peter Zing. I'm working tech innovation at KPMG, and we usually have these meetups at the pub, like every fortnight. So it's at the Metro Pub, but every few months or so, we have a presentation type event like this, just to go through the latest developments in science and technology on emerging technologies that we are like today. And I figured we probably should make it on a monthly basis because there's been so much happening in the science and tech world that it's just so hard to keep up. So today, we have a few fantastic speakers to go through with you. You know, we got Miao Ludo, we got Nathan Waters, we got Elise, and also got Skeeve at the back there. Transhumanism, like, what is it, right? It sounds a bit weird. So usually, transhumanism, we get confused with some other movements like the LGBTI, and we're all for that. But really, what it is all about, it's about transcending the limitations of our human biology through science and technology. So, you know, this would be increasing our intelligence. So you got the super intelligence sort of theme to it, you know, merging ourselves with artificial intelligence or just using devices to make it smarter. There's super longevity, which is using devices or other medicines to actually increase the healthy lifespan of the normal human. So the average age in the Western world is roughly 80 years old. But science says that there's a physical limit, maybe at 120, if you live healthy enough. But what if you could edit the human genome and other topics like that to actually extend that upper limit in the human biology? And the right one over there, the super well-being. How do you use technology to actually increase your happiness and well-being in the world? You know, we've got through the whole Maslow's hierarchy of needs. How do you use technology to help with your food, water, and safety, how to use it to enhance your notion of self, your purpose through the entire hierarchy, and how to transcend all those limitations that you might have in the physical world. So with that, that's a brief introduction to transhumanism. I'm not the star today, it'll be the speakers. Just going to do a quick highlight of some of the emerging technologies. Some of you might have heard Gartner Hype Cycle that just came out in August. Have you guys heard of that? Put your hand up if you have. This is the typical hype cycle curve for emerging technologies. So any new technology starts with an innovation trigger, whether that be a scientific discovery through a new type of material or a way of applying that technology. And it goes through that sort of innovation trigger, and it sort of distills throughout the masses. You know, as more people find out about it, usually at corporate events or, you know, those sort of Singularity University style TED Talks, it gets hyped up. So it sort of starts being inflated in the expectation of what those technologies can do. And once that sort of at the peak of the hype, that's when, you know, corporates usually come in and say, okay, well, we got to get into this. You know, we're gonna miss out. There's gonna be a FOMO, fear of missing out effect on the technology, right? You can see right up there today, the peak of the hype is deep learning, carbon nanotubes, IoT platforms. And follow that, you have a little bit of a dip, because as people start applying these technologies, they realize what they can and can't do with it. And what's, you know, matching the hype versus the actual reality of what those technologies can achieve. And you see blockchain coming down a little bit. You know, we've got head of blockchain at KPMG reckons he's going to skip this entire trough of disillusionment and go straight to this slope of enlightenment, because, you know, that's what he's funded to do. But this is actually the typical hype cycle curve. And you can see mixed reality is coming down, but augmented reality is right at this trough where, you know, we're seeing companies like Magic Leap not really achieving the sort of hype that over the years of secret development they've actually been promising. But one thing is to note, virtual reality is no longer on this map anymore. So last year, virtual reality was on it. Now it's just completely disappeared. It skipped the slope of enlightenment and just went straight to business as usual. So these technologies move fast. Oculus's goal is to reach over getting 7 or 8 billion people connected on the virtual reality devices. Well, 1 billion is a pretty good goal, but they've achieved less than 1% of that. Although industry-wise, it's already achieved that sort of mainstream approach, and it's all about adoption now. So how do you scale that to the masses? So that's Gartner's hype cycle. And this year, they've grouped all those technologies into these categories, these emerging technology trends for 2018. So here you have democratized AI. So this is all about how to use machine learning better, use deep neural networks, smart robots, virtual assistants, these chatbots, all of that, but it's democratized. So it's really easy to use. You no longer need to learn how to code to be able to use these tools, because now software vendors are providing them as drag and drop tools. And at KPMG, we're using some of the off-the-shelf counters to actually improve the productivity of our data scientists to actually automate some of that machine learning. That also includes autonomous vehicles, level 4 and level 5. Don't ask me the difference, but level 5 is just God mode, right? It'll just drive anywhere without needing human to take control, but level 4 is just below that, so it can drive in some main roads, but not everything. So that's democratized AI. Then we have digitized ecosystems. That includes blockchain for data security, digital twin, so you essentially have a digital version of the physical objects that you have, and IoT platforms and other things, knowledge graphs. What's interesting this year though, do-it-yourself biohacking has hit the mainstream. So now, do-it-yourself biohacking is an official category on the Gartner Hype Cycle for 2018. And that includes biochips, biotech cultured or artificial tissue, brain-computer interfaces, exoskeletons, augmented reality, mixed reality, and smart fabrics. So corporate people are actually going to take these into account, right? They're going to start hyping up these technologies. And I think transhumanism, being sort of an emerging technology fitting within all these different areas, is actually going to ride this wave of hype, but also go through the trials of proof of concepts and actually go through that disillusionment and eventually find something that sticks, that works. The others, this group, this transparently immersive experience, that's kind of like an other group, I reckon, because it's got 4D printing, you got edge AI, so you know, AI done at the edge, essentially being able to compute at the device level rather than having to go to the cloud. You have self-healing systems, you know, silicon anode batteries, smart dust, smart workspaces, etc. So it's a bit of an other category, and connected homes includes. Ubiquitous infrastructure includes 5G, and that's going to be a game changer in terms of how we can actually utilize faster internet speeds to adopt things like autonomous vehicles, do avatars using robotics. There's also carbon nanotubes as a new type of material to build things like space elevators. Right, there's a sort of very, very strong material you would need to actually connect the Earth to something that's object in space. And then there's a sort of a whole suite of infrastructure that helps facilitate things like AI, neuromorphic hardware, and quantum computing.
With the ubiquitous infrastructure, where does the NBN fit in?
Now, NBN is already, it's just stuck in the trough of disillusionment, like permanently, right? It's never coming out. That's it. I think, yeah, it's just going to fall right off the map next year, I reckon, when 5G comes out and on the trials.
Bringing gigabit Ethernet, though.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, gigabit Ethernet's coming out. And you got, you know, things like nanosatellites providing 5G. So it could get to a point where just...
Primarily, South Korea, Japan, Singapore, 10 gigs already.
They've already got 10 gigs, so it's like, we're already behind. We're in the trough right here. Pretty much. I'd like to introduce our first speaker today. His name is Miao Ludo, Bisho Gamma Miao Miao. And yeah, that's his Facebook profile. He's the co-founder of BioFoundry, Chief Strategy Officer of VivoKey, Civil Disobedience Enabler at Transport New South Wales, and works at UTS. He's also the CTO of AdaptGrow and worked at Livestock Labs.
Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands
together for Miao. I don't know how to react. Awesome. So I've been thinking about doing this talk for a little while. For those of you who don't know me, I set up BioFoundry, which is Australia's first open access molecular biology lab. And I've done a whole lot of other things. And we're really interested in genetic engineering, in particular, the practical applications of genetic engineering. So a lot of researchers at universities and things are always looking into what genes do and how to control them. But very few of them make anything that's useful or any cool products. And we had Elon Musk recently say, now that we've got rockets out of the way, we can finally move on to genetically engineered cat girls. So I sat there and I was wondering, I wonder if you could actually do it and what that would entail. So as you know, he's pretty good whenever he finds something he loves. In this case, it's anime. And he seems to be pretty successful. So I went and had a look what makes up a cat girl. And it's pretty much a normal girl except for two elements, which is the tail and the ears. I've decided to focus on one aspect of this today, which is the tail. The ears are a little bit more complicated, and it's common across all of them. It's like the defining thing of a cat girl. I actually asked Facebook before this for some feedback on what I should talk about, and some people said it was a bit sexist, so you can also have a cat boy or a gender ambiguous cat person. Okay, so can we actually do it? So I've broken apart and we kind of need funding. The hardest thing probably is a place where it's legal or viable. The tools to do it, and that's talking about the genetic tools, and an understanding of how tails actually grow in animals, other animals.
Hey, Mia.
Yep.
Don't get too many details. Look at somebody who would actually do it.
Yeah.
No, don't get too much detail.
Well, we wouldn't do it in Australia.
Oh, he would.
Because of this piece of legislation. It's quite entertaining and quite short if you feel like reading it afterwards, and I'll make my slides available. I highlighted some very important things in it, which is basically, sum it down, you can't make chimeric embryos and you can't make hybrid embryos, which is basically any way that we want to do this that uses animal DNA, you can't do it. And even if we found out a way to use human genes, as we'll talk about in a little bit, to do it, it would still be illegal, penalty 15 years. I don't think you want to go to jail as a cat person. But that's Australia. So China and America are both super keen to get involved with human genetic modification. They've both made modified human embryos. And in one case, there was a heart disease. 72% of 18 embryos that were created using this modified DNA were viable, which is huge. If you looked at this last year, it was almost every single one failed. There was heaps of problems. There was off-target mutations. So it looks like it works. So on the tools thing, yeah, it looks like we should be right. Also, we can't turn adults into cat people. This will all be talking about modifying embryos. I won't go heaps into why that is, but it's easy to make changes in the development more than it is to take an adult and try and get them to grow something. Okay, and we can do this pretty cheap. I set up my lab cost probably about $15,000 of my own money. It's about $2,000, I reckon, now, which is pretty cool. And there's funding available because Australians demand to have public relevance for research funding now. So I think we've got a strong case to get that. Okay, so let's go. I'm going to go into the genetics a bit now. I did a whole bunch of research and there are no known examples of humans growing tails. Now, this is really interesting because when Charles Darwin first proposed the theory of evolution, people are saying, oh, well, why are there no like humans running around with tails? And why isn't this like a mutation that happens? We still don't fully understand that. But the closest thing that they have is this pseudo tail. This was the least disturbing human tail photo I found. This is an MRI of the tail. So it's not a real tail. They call it a real tail because there's an even dumber tail. And it's basically just a collection of nerves, fat, and sometimes some like cartilage, but no vertebrae or muscles, no vertebrae or spine or anything like that. Even in really extreme cases, and I went through every single one of them because that would be the easiest way. Basically, there's other primates that have tails, and this is very similar to the type of tail a cat girl would have. I don't know whether the fur covers the entire thing or whether you can grow just a bit with the fur. That's for next presentation. But it's definitely possible. So only about 40 million years ago, we had the tails that we're after. So those genes are definitely still inside us. Why don't we grow tails? So yeah, basically I did some research and it says we don't really know why in primates, but an interesting thing came about recently, which is a fusion of two disciplines in biology. There's a really great video on YouTube, which is the Despacito, and it's done to the words Evo Devo, and it got me really excited in this. So it's basically a fusion of evolutionary biology with developmental biology. And when we started looking, we started to find the same genes all the way across the animal kingdom. So these colors basically directly map genes that control fly development to human development. So we may not need to find the genes in a primate to be able to work out which genes would control human tail formation. So it was discovered in America, I forgot the dude's name, Ed Caldwell. He found flies that grew legs where their antennae should be. And he started investigating the genome. And he found that you can basically move sections of the DNA around or express them at different times. And you can cause things that would grow or have grown in other things to grow there. So I'm just going to do a quick introduction to genetics. So this is basically my entire degree in one slide. Seriously though. DNA gets turned into RNA, and RNA gets turned into proteins. So DNA contains kind of all the instructions that you need, and there's kind of two sections to that as well. There's kind of like building blocks that you can use, and then what order to assemble them in. So they're both on the DNA, but they have different functions. And we've generally in biotech been really keen on what proteins we can make. So there's very, you know, commercially useful ones that are worth thousands of dollars a liter. But I'm gonna say that it might actually be more interesting to look in the regulation instead. So basically your DNA is like bound up around proteins into something called a chromosome, and they're like chapters of your book. For DNA to be read, it generally needs to be activated by something called a transcription factor. So transcription factors join the DNA and they recruit other proteins, and when enough of them are there, it causes a gene to be expressed. This will be very important because we're going to look at a very specific transcription factor, and it's called the HOX. The HOX genes control something called the homeobox proteins. They decide when genes get switched on and off. So they're the genes that we were looking before when it had the fly and the human. By changing these, we can affect the development and shape of all the body parts of any animal. That actually goes all the way down to trees and microbes. So basically, you've got a series of genes that sit on the DNA, and when they get expressed, they bind to various places in the genome. So if you look at this brown one on the left, it binds to multiple places, and the combination of those genes expressing causes an antenna or causes a leg. There's something else that is a bit interesting, which is these are called the HOX genes. If you look at the top, that's a linear sequence of DNA, a representation. And then you look at the next, which is the pupa, and then the final fly at the end. The genes actually correspond to where in the animal they express. This is called collinearity. Even if we don't know where the gene is, we know where in the genome we should be looking for it. If you've reached the shoulders, you haven't gone far enough. Keep on going down. Also, just interestingly, the way that we found this, they all share a sequence of 180 base pairs. So we just went basically control F through the genome, and anything that had that 108 base pairs was a HOX gene. Can anyone guess where in, or what function it might have?
Lobster HOX would be to host one part.
Yep, so it's basically the DNA binding section. So it's basically, you've got two bits to the gene. There's this bit, the purple section, which is the DNA binding section, and then there's a region of specificity, so it can work out which genes it wants to express. Okay, so how does this help us get cat girls? Humans have had tails when we were monkeys, so we probably have we almost definitely have the genes for it. Our coccyx is fused vertebrae, so we need to change the expression of those genes, and it should grow a tail. So our coccyx would form exactly the same way a tail does. There's a sequence of genes that initiate bud formation and then growing a vertebra. This is a mouse, and we've managed to, in a mouse, work out exactly which sections of its genome control tail development. We learned even more when we started comparing, and this is very recent, this is only a few months ago. We've just worked out the difference between snake and mouse development, and basically they utilize different kind of tricks to cause the vertebra to grow. So a snake uses a crazy one where it actually changes the molecular clock to grow ever more vertebra, and then it regulates different Hox genes along the way. So if I've still got anyone, also there's about 5 genes that control it. And the difference in expression is this. So you'll see different Hox genes along the way are controlling different types of tail. I think that's going to be the most difficult bit, but we know now how to accelerate the rate of division of the cells that will become the vertebrae. Not in humans, but in other animals. So we're getting close. So just to recap, basically, we know how to do it in other animals. If we want to do it in humans, it's going to be very difficult unless we actually try it. But I think we have all the information that we need to go through and make the first attempts. Future directions for biotech. So I think the really exciting thing about this type of research is a rethinking of the way that we use genetic modification techniques. So instead of getting things like algae and yeast to produce new proteins, maybe we should be regulating things like trees and animals to produce the things that we're interested in. So maybe it's regulating fruit development or something like that. So changing what they already do rather than forcing them to do something that they're not naturally able to do. And I think that's kind of the most exciting repercussions of this way of thinking. What about the ears? I reckon don't use genetics. Stellark said I could use this image. And he's a very famous Australian biohacker, kind of kicked off the whole grinding movement in Australia. He's granddaddy biohacker. And he's got a very functional, aesthetically pleasing ear. So I reckon the combination of those two things, we're going to do all right getting cat girls. Thank you for listening to my presentation.
That was Peter Zing talking about emerging technologies and Meow Ludo Meow Meow talking about how to create cat girls. Listen next time for Elise Sue on full automation and the future of work. And later, Nathan Waters on meeting human needs in the future. Look on the Diffusion episode page for the video of Peter and Meow's talks at Transhumanism Australia. I'll also put a link to the Evo Devo song that Meow likes so much. And that's all from us this week on Diffusion. Would you like to hear your voice on radio? Record a voice memo on your phone or use the voicemail tab on the website. We need more people contributing stories to Diffusion. Send your contributions, opinions, helpful suggestions, and donations to science@diffusionradio.com. That's science@diffusionradio.com. Please do send me an email with a question I can answer on the show. Please like the Diffusion Science Radio page on Facebook and rate us on iTunes. Tell your friends. Follow me on Twitter @IanWolf. The news music was Rhinos Theme by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com. Sound and fact-checking by Charles Willock. I produce Diffusion, which is broadcast around Australia, to 26 stations on the Community Radio Network, including 2RBM in the Blue Mountains of New South Wales, 8CCC in Alice Springs and Tennant Creek, 2MVR in Nambucca Valley, 3MBR in the Mallee Border districts of Victoria and South Australia, City Park Radio 7LTN in Launceston, Tasmania, 2XXFM in Canberra, and my local station, 2RDJ in Burwood, New South Wales. Diffusion is syndicated globally on the National Science Foundation's Science 360 internet radio station and also on astronomy.fm. Subscribe to our podcast on the Diffusion website, www.diffusionradio.com. That's www.diffusionradio.com, and check the website for links, photos, and videos about this week's show. If you enjoyed the show, you can explore more than 950 previous episodes archived on diffusionradio.com, where the shows are labelled by keywords so you can focus in on the stories you want to hear. Subscribe to the Diffusion YouTube channel at youtube.com/c/diffusionradio. I'm Ian Wolfe. Join us inside your audio device of choice for more science wondering next week on Diffusion Science Radio.